Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're back. It doesn't seem like much to you since we were just talking about Gone last week. But for us, it's been almost 4 months since we last talked about Gone. We did track down a copy of the novel. Luckily, it was actually not that hard to find because they had re-released it to coincide with the WGN release of the show. So I was able to pick it up just at a regular bookstore. I was very happy about that.
Yeah.
But hoo boy, was I not expecting it to be as different as it was.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say my first takeaway upon reading the book, right? And here's my big takeaway, and then I'll let you offer your thoughts on it. I understand reading the book, why someone says we have to adapt this. And after reading the book, I'm sad that they didn't. Hoo boy, did they change everything?
Well, okay, and here is what I am going to say.
Yeah.
I agree with you, sort of.
Right.
But I would say making the series true to the book.
Yeah.
Would have been like trying to turn Andrew Vax's
into a regular weekly TV show. Yeah.
Burke novels. It is.
Can't be done.
Too. And the other thing that I would say is that this woman was planning, because apparently she writes all these different novels.
Oh, yeah. She's got a whole bunch of different series.
And she was planning on making this a series, and she has never got the second book done.
I know. I was very surprised when I got to the end of the book, and it's just, what's the sequel going to be? Because the end of the book exists to set up a sequel, which we'll get to. But first off, if you want to, we're going to recommend the book, right?
Oh, yes.
I think we're
going to
recommend
that
anyone should go and pick this thing up.
Just make sure that you have a bit of a strong stomach.
It's rough. It's, I'm not going
to
deny
that.
You really have to be able to take, if you got through the inside, you should be able to get through this.
Maybe. This is worse.
No, it's worse than the inside. It absolutely is. But the inside is closer than Gone to this.
Yes.
You know?
Okay. And as we said, we would have liked, just to recapitulate, we gave it a recommendation. We also said we were sorry that they didn't continue on with it.
Oh, totally.
Because it had potential.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, and I can actually see why they made the changes. So it's an interesting some of the changes they made. And we'll talk about it.
Well, we'll talk about that as we go. But I think we can safely say we recommend the book. We think you should check out the book. Totally worth reading. But now we are going to have to spoil everything about the book in order to discuss it and how it is different than the TV show that it inspired. Because it's not really based on it, except in the most, there are three characters characters and a basic situation. But after that, the TV show is completely different.
No.
Frank. Oh, sorry, four characters.
Wait,
yes.
Frank is there?
Yeah.
Kick is there.
Yeah.
Nina is there. And the James character.
No, but I'm saying there. He is so, you can't say Bishop or James are the same character. They are completely different.
Yeah, except that they still, James was one of the children.
Yeah,
that
but I'm saying
okay,
that they only moved three characters over. Frank, Kick, and her mother. And to a certain
Nina.
Extent, but I'm just saying, barely at all. The recognizable characters are there. Those are the three recognizable characters.
Yeah, just a minute. Benjamina.
Yeah.
At least you know what Mina's full name is.
Yes, that's nice. But I'm just saying that she's not, she's not
a... She wasn't pivotal in the show, and she wasn't pivotal in the book.
Yes, I'm saying there was another character by the same name, but she's so unimportant to the story that it's not worth saying that they brought a character. Oh, it's not beloved character you remember all these traits of, they brought over. No, she's just a woman with a name, you know? Like, the mother, it's relatively true to the book. Frank is relatively true to the book. And Kick is fairly true to the book, I will say. Like, fairly true to the book. What? Everybody else, like James and Bishop, and those are the only two characters left who are in both, are completely different than their TV show counterparts.
Yes, yes. Except for the computer nerdiness.
Yeah, but for James. That.
Yeah, and Bishop. Bishop is the one with the money.
Yes. Well, no, I mean, he is a much more central character, much more important character, much more central character to the book than he is on the show. In the show, he's just a cop, and he's a cop who's got his own stuff going on, and they have a similar backstory, but he is a completely different character on the show.
Yeah, whereas Frank
takes on a bunch of those roles.
Yeah, whereas he's a secondary character, and...
Frank makes a couple of appearances in the book, and that's it. But yes, we're going to recommend you check out the book. I definitely think it's worth reading. If you liked the show at all, it's completely worth reading. And when I got to the end, and I will just say, when I got to the end and saw how the book ended, and I was like, and they didn't make a, she didn't write a second book? How did she not write a second book after that?
There is a place mark on Amazon for the second book. It's got a name.
Oh, it does? So it is going to come out. Oh, it is going to come out.
Yeah, but it's been going to come out forever. It is worse than Game of Thrones. I don't think she's got the stomach to go any further
back
with
there.
Back there. I mean, I am telling you
it's
that
it's tough. I mean, it is tough.
Reading that book, you start it, and then as I'm going through it, and because it's
You have any of these experiences in your life, if you have known someone who has had who has been molested or been victimized, anything, this book, be prepared that it will trigger you. There is some intense stuff in here.
Like, there has to be, it has to be more than, and that's why it does remind you of Rebecca. Right? Yeah. That she was taken and she was gone for X amount of time. This little girl was taken for, and it is just.
We'll get to it. But yeah, like a thing we mentioned about the TV show, right? Was at the core of the TV show, there is an element, and there's no nice way to say it, of cowardice. Because it's a TV show, produced internationally for NBC and to air on WGN America, you can't admit that these are all child molesters. Like, you can't say out loud that she was taken by child molesters to be child molested her entire life, right? And that is the key defining thing that has made up her entire childhood and into her life, is the aftermath of 5 years of sexual abuse. Of nonstop sexual abuse by people who identified themselves as her family, right? And it is horrible, right? And you can't say that on the show. Like, they couldn't never say that on the show. And the book is not shy about that.
Oh, well, I don't even think that you can say not shy. I mean, for her to have written this, I will tell you that I spent 24 hours of being this quasi depressed. Like, because this is not exactly my experience, but her inability to remember her so many of these things, it is very, very real. And I would say, if you have any lengthy, like, I'm not suggesting that you go and read this book if you've had basically family incest issues, for sure. I mean, that wasn't mine, and it was bad enough. But it's the trust factor. It's the, when we get near the end, when she finally starts to remember.
Yes.
When she finally at least remembers the worst part of it,
Right.
The worst part, the part, anyway, I don't know where you want to go with this, how you want to deal with this.
Well, because I will, I mean, here's a funny thing. When we started watching the series, right, when I started watching, I made a joke about how this is a woman who watched the show The Inside and decided she was going to do her own take on it when we were watching the show. I mentioned that on one of the episodes. But when I read the book, I think that might not be a joke. I think it might have been partially inspired because there is one of the more horrific episodes of The Inside is the one about the girl who has been molested her whole life and been, you know, the star of, child pornography. And specifically, like, there is this woman and she's gone missing. And we later find out that she had spent her entire life being molested, and they think she's in a snuff film. And it's like, and we find out that she is the most famous child pornography victim on the internet, because over a decade, there were thousands of videos of her made. And it's like every child porn person knows this girl because of the sheer volume of stuff that was made with her. Mm-hmm. And that is the backstory we get of this horrible victim of abuse. And it's the Keith Sayarbayaka episode. And it's just, it's a rough episode. I think that's gem. And it's amazing, right?
Yeah.
And then when you read the book, you're like, and you get halfway through this book and you're like, oh my God, that's Kick's story.
Yeah. Kick's story, except that Kick gets
rescued when she's still a child.
When she's 11.
Yeah, when she's like 11. When she's 11.
Yeah. When she's 11,
yeah.
Whereas, of course, the girl in the Inside story, never.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, it makes me think that she did, in fact, watch and was inspired by The Inside when you realize that the story you're watching is about it's that girl's story. And yes, it's a different version. It's one who escaped and self-actualized and tried to find a way to be her own person afterwards and became obsessed with self-defense and... Like, I'm not saying it's the exact same character. I'm saying it's the exact same premise for a character.
Yeah.
To the point where there's this horrific thing that it's like, I know they couldn't do it on the show for, you know, standards and practices reasons. But the idea is that because she's this horrifying idea that there are laws about notifying victims of crime.
Yeah.
And so literally every time someone gets arrested with some of her pornography made of her, she gets notified because she's a victim of that crime. And so literally like a week doesn't go by when she doesn't get a letter from some state attorney general that a pedophile has been arrested with some footage of her. Oh my God, that is such a tough thing to hear.
Yeah, because you don't know, I mean, the book is really good about just slowly drawing you in to the absolute horrors of this.
Yeah, it takes so much time to get there.
The horror of the end.
Yeah, well, we'll get to the end in a minute. Yeah. We'll get to the end. Well, let's not talk about the end right away. But yeah.
Her exploitation never ends.
No, never.
Now she's just being exploited by the good guys.
Yep. And, well, good guys, bad guys. I mean, there's a whole conversation there.
You know, ultimately, on a comparative level, I mean, that's...
Yeah, comparative level. Yeah. You're right. I shouldn't be so harsh on them, but at the same time, well, we'll get there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's so... it's reminiscent to the... Like, the plot is reminiscent to the kind of plots they did on the show.
Yes.
Yeah. There is an abduction. Right. There is an abduction. I mean, there's elements of the first episode of the show that are reflected in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That comes straight out of the book, like the secret exploding room, like the hints of the network, stuff like that. That's all in here. There's a it literally just starts off with she is going about her life and a strange man breaks into her apartment.
Well, no, you see her. No, it opens first. You see her being obsessed by the latest child abduction.
Yeah, child abduction. And then this strange man breaks into her apartment, to ask her to help with the latest child abduction in the most inappropriate way possible. We get a very, very different introduction to Bishop in this than we do in the show. Because they do a fight scene in the show, and here, and I mean, just, and it's, you're never supposed to like or trust the character, because the first interaction is literally sexual menace. That is how he chooses to introduce himself to her. And it's very intense, and it's, it, I mean, it's a test he's doing to see, you know, how, like, how herself she is, how controllable she might be. Like, you know why he's doing the awful thing of showing up and menacing her while she's in the shower?
Yep.
Like, you get why he's doing it, but Jesus Christ, what an awful person Bishop is in the book.
Well, he did manage to get his balls kicked.
Yeah, kicked. So, it's, you know, that's very nice.
There was a little bit of satisfaction.
No, there is. It's nice, and it makes you feel happy, but at the same time, he's a terrible person. He comes off as, like, a terrible person.
Well, yeah, and there's no way. Like, if you read the book,
yeah,
the only problem with reading the book after having watched the series,
yeah,
is that you have this picture of right. who Bishop is. Like you have a picture, you have
going
this,
in.
And you have to sort of, you eventually, because of all the things he does, you switch it.
Yes.
You know, but it was a little bit hard sort of at the beginning to get rid of the
first impression the character
person,
makes.
The person yeah. that Bishop is
in the show,
the TV series.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and he does all of this. And so you're giving him the benefit of the doubt if.
Because of the I see what you're saying. Because of the expectations created by the show, you yes. end up trying to give this character the benefit of the doubt. And it's only over the course of the entire book that you realize, no, this is a completely different character who shares a single point of commonality. He did have a twin brother who was abducted.
Yeah, and a name.
And the character's name. That's mm-hmm. the only similarity between the characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that's key. And you're right, it did take me a little while to get there. I think I was less, less willing to give him a ton of the benefit of the doubt because there is so much pointedly sexual threat menace to the way he introduces himself.
Yeah, well,
like, it is so unpleasant.
Yes, and I think that...
That he's like, I'm going to violate your personal space.
Yes, you didn't... How can I put it? You didn't tell me anything about the book.
No, nothing.
Right? So when I'm reading it, and I was just reading it a few pages at a time, and then I just sat, you know... So it didn't have... If I had sat down and started to read it and just kept going...
Yeah.
But I didn't for a number of reasons. And then I got so far... I don't know. I probably about a third of the way. And I said, oh, jeez, I got to finish it. And today I cannot let it.
You can't wait. You can't let it fester any further.
It was like doing the inside the way we did. I said, I just have to keep going with this. And no, it was. He manipulated her from the beginning.
Yeah.
And it was, yes, that. The sexual menace she managed to, I think what I did, if I was to say what I did, was say, yes, it was testing her to see if how she would react. And then I'm going, yes, well, she showed him, right?
Yeah, I know.
You know, she didn't even care that she was, because she got out of the shower and there's this strange man.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, and she's so, like,
and she's
so
in
determined.
A towel.
To not be menaced.
Yes.
That she even like lets her towel go to make it clear that no, like, you're not a threat to me.
Yeah.
And it's, it's the kind of scene, and again, you can never do on the show, but like, he is making this horrible attempt to menace her, and she's trying to take back the power in any way she can.
Yeah. And it is why I don't even think they could make a movie of this.
I think you could. I mean, I don't think that
the only way, the only way to have the horror of it is to come close to doing something like Pretty Baby.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And it's... and Pretty Baby could not be made today.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. But I, you, I will say that, I mean, if 8mm got made, this can get made.
8mm was not about children, per se.
Well, no, but I mean, that is an element of it. Like, they do mention that in as a thing in the world, right? They do mention child pornography in the world of it. But it's not about 8mm, but it's not about child pornography.
When was 8mm made?
99. So yeah, it's, you're right. That I'm not saying they wouldn't have trouble making it today. I'm saying I believe this could be made into a movie today. I don't think it would be easy to do. And if someone was passionate, I think they could get it done.
I don't know, like, and it wouldn't be a good movie. How are you going to do the key rape scene?
Yeah.
Near the end of it. How are you going to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not saying it would be easy.
Avatars?
Yeah. Like, well, no, you would film it very carefully, and you would film around things, and you would leave stuff off camera, and you would do a lot of stuff with audio.
Do you know how unpleasant and how god-awful and how that turned my stomach?
Of course.
And I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sitting here talking.
You should probably explain to, I know. I get it. I completely understand it. You should probably to explain to people the context of the scene you're talking about.
Okay, so we're getting near the end, because what happens is they go looking. They go looking. It turns out that James was also, she knew James as a child.
Yeah.
Because he had also been abducted and was part of the child porn ring. And they were forced to have sexual encounters. These two children.
And it's like, Jesus. Yeah. No wonder he is a complete wreck. Because the James of the book is a complete wreck who can't go outdoors.
No, he can't. He cannot go outdoors. Now, mind you, never mind. I don't even want to go there. No, so what happens, though, and as they're going and going and keep going and keep going and keep going, and they keep tracking things down, and she gets the odd, she starts to get sort of memories. And they want to find this one guy who tortures these children, because these children get moved on, right? And
it's basically the idea the network is, and this is the really horrific, one of the really horrific things that the book brings up, that there is a network that they trade because people have a specific age of victim they prefer. Yep. They have a network to trade new victims out when their victims are getting too old.
Or sell them.
Or sell them, yes. Or sell
them. Because the one guy that had James sold him with enough money to buy
a car.
Some kind of a high-end sports car.
Yeah. And there is a guy out there who is tangentially related to this, who is, you know, related to this network, and he has money, right? He has plenty of money. We never find out where from. But basically, he is a vulture at the edge of this organization that they don't even like that much, because he will torture and murder children. Not every time. But, I mean, he tortures them and sometimes they die, because what he's into is pain. I mean, to a certain extent, they're all into suffering, but most of them have a myth that they, quote unquote, love children. And this is a so-and-so relationship and blah, blah, blah. Oh, well, you know how the Greeks did it and blah, 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 Nambla.
Yeah, crap, yeah, all right? This crap.
Like, all of the lies they tell themselves. Well, this guy is a guy who doesn't tell himself lies. This is a guy who just murders children and
tortures them, and if he accidentally murders children,
it's not
them.
He doesn't care,
because James, of course, James didn't die,
no, but he was horribly tortured by this guy,
And then dumped on the street.
And then dumped on the street and became a hustler. And she found out about him years later and rescued him. Mm-hmm. And oh my God.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, so, it makes their relationship a lot more interesting than it is on the show.
Yeah. Well, no, you understand it on the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, now, you understand it in the book.
In the book. In a way that we never get a chance to. Yeah. We never got into it.
Because you don't get the connection is that they knew one another as children because they were both part of this network.
Exactly.
And
so there is this guy who is even the other pedophiles don't really like this guy.
Except he's got money and
But they'll always take the money. That's the thing.
And he funds Mel's organization. By the way, Mel is the other character.
Who's moved over. Yes, but he is, again, so different here that I almost has, you know... like Lee Turgeson's good in the show, but oh my God, when you add in, like I said, remember how I said that in the episode where she has to confront Lee Turgeson on the show, it's not as powerful as it should be because you don't have the additional level in the show. The show is never explicit that this is the man who raped her every day for 6 years.
Yeah. And that's the problem. And what happens, of course, is, you get the whole thing about how he basically leaves her in a dark space only to feed her for X 6 months or so until he's broken her down.
Yeah. And then starts rebuilding her.
And the scene that upset, when we get to the scene that we were trying to talk about the context of the scene that makes me so mad.
Yeah.
Or not mad, which I say they just, I don't know how they would ever be able in a film to do it so powerfully. But anyway, you know, they were... The iron guy, his name is Iron something or other,
yeah.
and Klugman, which is the guy that held James and then sold him to the iron guy, and Mel break her in.
Yes. Yeah. And that is what we would just, in a movie, it would be hard to do because you could only show flashes of it and you could only show... Like, you could, I mean, honestly, you might have to do one of those things where it is done entirely by someone just telling the story. Like, just the actress telling the story of what happened.
Oh, yeah, I know. Anyway.
No, it's such a disturbing scene. And that's what we're getting to. She remembers.
She finally remembers. Because what has happened is that Klugman says to her at one time, oh, by the way, you know, he wanted to buy you too. But Mel wouldn't sell you.
Yeah.
Mel wanted too much money for you. And she says, my father loved me.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Is what she says to him still at that point.
I know.
And
you're wondering, like, what is... And that's such a great moment. Because you're like, does she really believe that there's no price at which Mel would have sold her? Or is that a lie she's telling him?
That's a lie she's telling herself.
I hope. Yeah, no, but you're right. Is she lying to herself?
She's lying to herself.
You're right. She's lying to herself.
This is part of it. This is part of this because and that's what you get.
That's how thorough the brainwashing is. Yeah.
Right. That he took care of her. He always took care of her. He made sure, and he told her about all of these bad people who were going to destroy them, and all of this stuff, and she believed it. She believed it. She believed it. She believed it. And then she found out it wasn't true because she was going to kill Frank.
Yeah.
And Frank knew it and managed to talk her down.
Yeah.
From killing him. When she was 11 years old.
And she had the gun. Yeah, because they do that scene. And it's interesting because they do the scene. It's a much more intense scene than in the show. Because in the show, she just flees and deletes the files. Mm-hmm. Right? Deletes all the files on the show they call Legion. There's no comparative name in the book. Whereas in the show, he's got guns hidden all over the house.
Yeah.
Right. And has been taught to, you know, had been taught to kill anyone who tries to take him and tries to split them apart. And so she gets a gun on Frank. And
particularly since they've killed her mother, or her mother commits suicide.
But to her, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to her, there's no difference there. So she gets the gun and she's going to shoot Frank. But he manages the thing correctly. And she goes and she destroys the computer so they can't track down the network. And so And the thing is, it's so much more intense than in the show, because without the, oh, well, this, not even fig leaf, but this, like, refusal to accept what it's about, she is living every day with the terrifying idea that, you know, how many kids have suffered because of that thing I did. And yes. Frank has told her it's not her fault.
Yes. Right?
Because she was brainwashed. But how do you internalize it not being your fault when you did this horrible thing?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a very powerful scene.
Yes, it the whole, all of it is, I mean, the book is powerful. Right?
Yeah.
It is powerful. You just keep going and going and going, and it is, oh my, it does everything.
It never looks away from it.
No, everything that in the, because we have complained about, you would complain that Kick, you know, had no emotion. I said it, and I would say, well, yeah, but it's all internalized because they can't show, they can't, I mean, how do you do these flashbacks of her being sexually abused?
I know.
And,
but in a book, we can talk about it. And it is, yeah.
And all of these different, when they break open the bedroom, the room where they did all the filming.
I know.
You read about it.
There's a scene where they try and figure out, there's actually a really good detective-y scene in the book where they're trying to figure out where this guy lived. Because if they can figure out where he lived, there is a good chance they can figure out who he is and get the, you know, like get a connection to him and track him down and save the kid he has abducted. And it's actually very entertaining, because there's a moment that I remembered from, Zodiac, which is, there's this great line in Zodiac that, in one of the letters he mentioned a basement, and like all the characters are like, there's not a lot of basements in California. And that happened in this thing too, that it's like, she remembers the house. They were in California and they had a pool and they had a basement. And that alone is enough of a lead to get them moving towards the thing, especially with her knowledge and the piece of like knowledge that she had of all of the houses they moved to. And this is something I hadn't thought of. It didn't make it into the show, but I thought it was very clever. They never lived in a neighborhood that had sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you live in a neighborhood that has sidewalks, there's going to be foot traffic. And if people drive through a neighborhood, they don't notice what's going on in the neighborhood. But if people walk through a neighborhood, they notice things.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a nice touch. And so that's the little personal expertise she brought to it. Is like, she knows it would be a neighborhood that doesn't have sidewalks.
And it had to be a house that had a basement.
A basement, a pool, no sidewalks. That actually gets them there. Surprisingly quickly.
Well, it gets them to the neighborhood because he's smart enough to call somebody in real estate
and say, we need a neighborhood.
This is what we're looking for.
So-and-so. Yeah.
You know, and the person at the real estate, well, there aren't very many basements.
I know, in California.
However, this neighborhood, you might want to look in this neighborhood. And they start driving through a particular neighborhood.
Until she starts remembering things.
Yeah, until she sees... You know, and,
And also you've got Google. Also, you got Google Maps to know to find out which houses have pools.
It turns out that the house didn't have a pool, though.
No. Oh no, it had a pool, but it had been filled in, didn't it? Oh no, you're right. It didn't have a pool because she was conflating it with the pool at the thing. Yes, or it didn't have a pool anymore. Right. But and then you got the guy who finds out that his house had a child dungeon in the basement.
Yeah.
Oh, that poor man.
The poor man. Thank heavens, his wife had died.
Yeah. Before
or they would have been moving.
Yeah, or they would have had to move. But the day gets saved, and that's what counts.
Yeah, it's
a good scene. I mean, how the detective stuff and how they find it, it's all very well done.
Yep.
Like, it really is.
You follow it through, it makes perfectly good sense. As she's talking about how there's all this noise of waves and things like that, and he says, okay, what sounds like waves? Oh, a freeway.
Yes. Oh, no, yeah, and a freeway sounds like waves, so it wasn't actually near the beach.
For her, because she would have been in the house and in the basement. She said it was near a beach, right?
But, of course, it wasn't. It was next to the freeway. It's just a similar sound.
Yeah. So it was interesting. I think they handled they handled it all very well. Her issues with sexuality are clear up front.
Yep.
Right? You don't have to worry about that. Bishop is a...
Yeah, I guess we should mention, the way in which he's completely different. That's so interesting. He is not a, he's not in the FBI. He's not a cop of any kind. He is a mercenary.
He had been a Byron's, well, he had been a seller of weapons. He'd been a weapons.
Well, no, but I mean, he started as a mercenary.
Yeah.
He went to work for an arms dealer because that's a normal career path.
Yeah.
And as we find out in the book, he's still working for that arms dealer.
Yeah, except he's no longer working arms. And for whatever reason, because we don't find out in the book, this man is more than willing to let him spend all his money and use the jet. And
okay, everything. And I guess we'll get at this thing. The big twist at the end of the book. Which now we can get to. Because basically they find out where he lives. She realizes his connection to the motel where they're taking his children, and they have a giant confrontation with him. It's a very intense showdown with the killer at the end. It's a very good scene. I was 100% happy with the end of this book. Right?
Yes.
So I think we can agree with that. But now we have to get to the big thing, which is we have wrapped it up. The child has been rescued. Jane, her dog is killed. Oh my god,
that was horrible.
I was not happy with her dog getting killed. Oh my, but James survives his attack. James is attacked, but he survives. The dog does not survive the attack, and it's especially traumatic because she had a puppy before she was kidnapped, and you know, it's now 16 years later, so the dog is obviously on its last legs. But they make a note that, like, no matter how much you messed up her mind and identity, she was a child and she still remembered her puppy when she
got
home.
Yeah, that was the funny thing. No, she remembered it when Frank showed up at the house, at the beginning. That's the thing he asks her. She remembers the name of her dog.
It's a beautiful scene.
Only thing she remembers is
which makes it all the more heartbreaking when that dog gets killed.
And then she blames herself by saying, yes, but if I had done what my mother said, which was put him down, he would never have been killed like this.
Yeah, but she couldn't bear to... And I mean, there's the metaphorical element there. She can't bear to let go of the last element of her pre-abduction life. Because that's what the dog was. It was the last piece.
Yeah, the only element she remembers from her
abduction life.
She no longer gets along with her sister. As she said, she looks at pictures and she says they must have gotten along. They must have been friends.
At some point, yeah.
Because all the pictures indicate that. But
she has no emotional connection to her sister.
And her sister's
been completely left. Oh, God. Her mother's such a monster.
Her mother is more of a monster in the book.
Yeah, she really is.
Then she is, like, you have some rapprochement happening in the
show.
In the TV
which might have eventually happened in the books, had they continued.
Not in the book.
Not in the book.
Yeah, but she's a self-absorbed narcissist. Truly self-absorbed narcissistic woman.
Oh, yeah. No, she's terrible. But, and this is the point that, all right, so now that's the premise, and that's what's established, that's what's going on. Now we'll get to the twist.
Holy shit.
Okay, so... What we learn at the end of the book is that Bishop, who has...
You have to set it up.
Oh, sorry, I have to set it up.
Mel is dying.
His kidneys are gone. Yeah. He is going to be dead soon.
And she has already done...
the test.
She has done a test to make sure
see
that
if
she's
they are
not
a match.
Not a match. And this is why I say that she is... lying to herself, because she still has this attachment to Mel.
And she did
years
the test.
Later, you know, she still has this. So she did do the test, and the test results come basically at the beginning of the book, and we don't know what those test results are about. In fact, there's no clue, even when Bishop forces her to go and see Mel, there's still no clue.
About whether or not. But, if you're paying attention...
What those tests are about.
Yeah, but if you're paying attention, you can figure it out. Because then we find out at the end of the book that basically everything Bishop has done you know, encouraging her, going to her, trying to find this person, has been to get her into a place where she will donate a kidney to Mel.
Yep.
That's the reason he did all of it. And he, this entire time, has been working for his boss, a shady billionaire who doesn't just own, you know, who doesn't just deal arms and do plenty of money stuff. He even owns the places that were responsible for the testing, which is how they knew before anybody else that she was a match for Mel. And they knew to do this whole thing to try and trick her. They figured she's not going to do it. We have to give her something she wants to get her to save Mel. And they so they luck into this whole abducted kid and manipulate her into solving this case and getting the help from Mel, because if she gets from help from Mel to solve the case, well, then obviously that'll put her into a headspace where she'll save Mel's life, is their thinking, and their thinking works.
And their thinking works.
And at the end of the book, you're like, why the hell does this billionaire want Mel alive?
No, Frank is in on it too.
Oh no, I know Frank's in on it too, but it's like, there's got to be something really shady going on beyond just wanting, like, has Mel promised to help take down the entire thing? Because it's like, because there's, Frank is aware of it, but to a certain extent, is Frank doing it to get Mel's help with things, or is Frank doing it because these people are incredibly rich and powerful and are pulling the levers of government?
Yeah,
and we don't get an answer on this. And I want to make it clear, that's the end of the book. That's the last thing that happens in the book, is that everybody has been manipulating her to get her to save Mel's life.
Yes. And the surprising thing about that is that she has access to all of the money.
Yeah.
This is this horrible, horrible, horrible thing, is that all of her videos...
Yep.
From when she was part of this child porn ring.
Oh yeah, we didn't mention that part. Mel gives her $30 million.
Well, she keeps getting money from it. That's why the Iron Guy wants the password.
Yeah. And we should have mentioned that the reason the Iron Man wants after her is because he knows that all of the money, like, that essentially a shadow corporation has been sent up, and every time people have been buying her footage, money has been going into a secret Cayman Islands bank account. So there's like $30 million or some crazy amount of money sitting in there that she didn't know about for X amount of time.
Well, she only found out now at the end.
Yeah, she only finds out right at the end of the book. But Mel, and this is the kicker between with her relationship with Mel always intended for her to have the money.
And the reason the Iron Man is supposed to get a third, is supposed to be kicked back a third of all money made.
Yes.
From the porn videos. That was the deal he made when he gave Mel all this money to set everything up.
To set everything up that he would produce. And he's been pissed off because all this time, Mel has been in jail.
Yes. There's still money. And he's not
getting
the cut. And
there's still money accruing that he's not getting the cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bleak end.
Oh, my God. Gone, and she's left with James at his bishop's house on an island. And
well,
she's
it's not even Bishop's
there.
House; it's the billionaire boss's house.
Yeah,
she thinks it's Bishop leads her to believe it's his house, but no, it's his billionaire boss.
Yeah, and then she says, "Well, I've got months right now to go through this house
and figure out exactly who this billionaire is." And it's like, and I just, there's a mercenariness to that scene that it's like, she's like, everyone will believe I just wanted the most comfortable place for James to stay. But really, this is my, you know, and while that's true, I can also use this time to investigate the scumbag organization who's responsible for all of this.
Except, and we don't know why.
You have no impression from
Bishop that he's left the gun business.
Yep.
And that this man has made more than enough money that he has probably left the gun business. But all Bishop says is, well, he doesn't care what I do.
Yes.
He supports me in whatever I do.
But then we find out.
We don't know what's going on. That's all.
But I mean, that's what he says. But then we find out at the end of, and Bishop really does hate these child molesters. Don't get me wrong. You know, and this guy presumably responsible for the death of his brother. But beyond that, and I think this is the key part, like, as we find out at the end, this is more than Bishop using his boss's money to solve murders, because it's been about the medical test all along, and that's so far above Bishop's pay grade that you can't take, like, was Bishop being manipulated by his boss too? Because his boss knew his feelings about the child molesters, or no, was Bishop in every step of the deception?
I get the impression that he was in every step of the deception.
Exactly, but it is the kind of end of book rug pull that lets you just sit there saying, so I can't be sure of anything that happened. And that's why it's so powerful. Yeah, I was so happy with the end of this book.
Yeah.
And immediately I went to the internet. I'm like, is there a sequel? And there's not a sequel yet.
No,
she might finally write it, but I mean, I haven't read her other books, but it leaves you in a very interesting place.
Well, I always say, I like the, after I read the book, okay, I'm going, maybe this is a case of Betty Lambert, who wrote
Betty Lambert?
All of this. She's a Canadian playwright.
Okay.
Everything she wrote is so weird and experimental. And she's a feminist, and she's this, that, and the other thing. But she wrote something called Jenny's Story.
Okay.
Which is just a straight line, three act, regular play about this girl who is growing up in Alberta.
Okay.
She finds out that she gets married. Like, she's been growing up. She's been sexually abused by this priest, but she's growing up. She's married this guy. But she doesn't get pregnant. So she goes to Calgary because she does remember that at one point she was in Calgary to visit these doctors. Right. And she had an operation and the priest had told her it was just appendicitis. Okay.
Okay.
And so she goes to see this doctor. She sends him a letter. And when she gets there, he says to her, he says, oh, I'm so surprised. And she looks at him and says, well, why? He said, I was told you were a mental defective, which would have been the
doctor. Oh, no.
And the priest had
sterilized her. Yeah.
The priest had told her not to say anything.
Of course.
When they
That's
were
what
there.
Priests do.
And he told the doctor that she was a mental defective and she was sexually active and so they sterilized her.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Right? Is the only straight line point. And then at the end, she kills herself. In this book, she sets up a funeral pyre like they do, like for Hindu widows, the old...
I understand.
Sati, And... so that her husband will be free to marry again.
Oh, my God.
Now, he doesn't want this. I mean...
Well, of course not. No.
Anyway, and he hates the Catholic Church anyway.
Yeah.
Irishman hates the Catholic Church.
It's not unusual.
For a lot of reasons. And but it's a really, really good play. It's a straight, as I said, it's just a straight narrative play. It's got its three acts. It's got everything that you do when you write a play. It's the only one she's ever written like that. And I'm going, couldn't do it again, eh? This was based on a true story. So I really wonder, like, yes, there has to have been something in this woman's background that is stopping her from writing the next book.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, it's there's such a natural next place to go with it. Like, it's so...
Yeah, it's all set up for the next book.
Yeah. And I'm not saying I feel like we're being cheated by not having the next book, but I do really desperately want to find out what happens next in this story. And it's like, you think, oh, well, we got the TV show for that, but we don't, because it's a completely different story.
Yeah. And the TV show just isn't going to do it, right?
No, the TV is not going to satisfy. It's not going to scratch the itch.
No.
That this book leaves us with. But anyway, so yeah, I think It really is. It's well written. It moves along at a really good clip. It is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't shy away from the awfulness the way the show does at times. Like, I think it is. We liked the show well enough. I mean, I stand by calling it The Inside Light. I still to this day. But it's like this book feels like another thing inspired a little by The Inside, but it is willing to be as dark as that premise required in a way you can't do on television. So the book is not afraid of it the way other things have been.
Yeah.
And that really impressed me. And I was, like I said, very, very happy with where the book ended up. Just, so tough.
Yeah.
It's so tough.
It was a tough read. There was no question. It was a tough, tough read. Yeah, right. See, it even says here, Kick Lanigan book one. So if you go.
Yeah, no, I get it. Hopefully, like, dear writer of the Kick Lanigan series.
Yeah.
I want you to figure out a way to keep this going because it really deserves it. Like, it really deserves it. And by the time you hear this, I mean, I don't know that she's ever going to hear this, but we are going to tell her about this episode of the podcast on Facebook, I assume.
Yeah, I assume she's got a Facebook page.
Most people do. And just say that if by something you are, if some amazing, like, turn of fate you are listening to this, great work, please write another book. We really want to know what happens next.
Yeah.
You know, we really, really want to know what happens next. Okay, so that's going to be the end, sadly, of us talking about Gone.
Yeah.
Unless she writes another book.
Yeah, and
we're not going to...
Where the hell did I read? No, I read somewhere. It actually has a name. I think it has been pulled. When I first looked...
Yeah.
Right? Because I think the second one is like, Oh Kick or something like that.
Yeah.
Well,
the first one is called One Kick.
It has a title. Yes, it's One Kick, but the second one had a title.
Okay, so she got far enough along.
No, this is just Kick Lanigan 1 in German.
Yeah.
One Kick. Oh, it's called Kick Back.
Okay.
Guess what? It's got it. You know what? It's got a dead date on it.
December 31st, 2020?
2030.
Oh, so she's in no rush. Okay.
Pre-ordering guarantees the price of $33.95 hardcover.
Well, you know what? That means she's working on it, okay? Whether, I mean, just like the Winds of Winter, she's working on it.
I was going to say, maybe it's a typo, December 31st, 2020, maybe, but this says December 31st, 2030.
Well, usually when December 31st means you hope it comes out this year, but you have no confidence of a date. So December 31st, whenever you see December 31st on a release date, that means we have no confidence it's actually coming out this year, but we're optimistic.
Yeah.
That's what that means. And although why you would set it to 2030, I don't know.
She has got, and the publisher is Simon & Schuster, so she has a contract of one sort or another to do this.
Do this book, but you know what? You know, I mean, the thing is, given how intense this book was, I can imagine the follow-up is going to take a lot out of you.
Yeah.
I just hope she figures out a way to finish it, because it's that good. All right, so we're going to wrap this up now. Thanks for joining us on this whole trip through Gone. We hope you enjoy season 10 of Criminal Minds, which is what's season 9, season 10, whatever one you're listening to right now. Like I said, we recorded this 4 months after the rest of our Gone series, so we're a little unclear on when exactly this is getting posted, but it's a great book. I really think that if you listen to this without reading it, it's still worth checking out the book.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you like the show. Like, it is really good. We were going to be back for more Criminal Minds. You're listening to it every Thursday. And we're going to see you there. I'm trying to remember what comes between the seasons afterwards. It's honestly difficult to remember because we're so far away from it. But oh, by the time people listen to this, Criminal Minds is over. Well, oh, yes. we hope you liked the last episode. We don't know what's happened yet.
No. Well, so far so good, though.
So far so good. Well, no, yeah. Three terrible episodes and then the first good episode in years. But, you know, we're cautiously optimistic after what they've done with Reed's character. But you've heard us talk about all this in the past. So for now, I'm going to say, if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you would like to recommend any profiling related fiction, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're listening to this on an app, be sure to rate the podcast because that's how people find it. You have to trick the app into thinking you like it, and then the app will think other people will like it as well. It's science. I don't claim to understand it, but that is the truth. We'll see you back here on Thursday for more Criminal Minds. But until then, I'm going to say au revoir.
And have a good couple of days.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.